Let's give it up one more time for our dads. We are glad for them, and we've got a dad who is coming to minister today, our beloved friend, Pastor Sam Farina, as we continue our series in Jonah, A Fishy Tale About Faith. Give it up for Sam. We love him. We appreciate him. We're glad that you are here, my friend. God bless.
Well, good morning. And what an incredible day to be able to be here, home at Church of Hope. And Father's Day, but Father's Day can be difficult for some fathers. And if that's the case today, I want you to stick with me, whether you're watching on Facebook this morning or you're here, I want you to stick with me to the very end because I'm going to share two stories of fathers today, and I want you to stay with me to the end, because if you're here and maybe there's been disappointment, maybe there's not been a feeling, maybe there's some shame or maybe some guilt or some things that have gone on, I want you to stick with me today because today is for you. And maybe you're a son or a daughter and you're here today and you've got some of those same feelings about relationship with dad or things that have happened. Stick with me to the very end today. Okay? Because today is from Jonah chapter 3, and I want you to understand, listen to this verse, Jonah chapter 3, verse 10, pull your notes out, and we're going to fill those in, and we're going to write on them a little bit. Jonah 3, verse 10. When God saw what they did, how they turned from their evil way, God relented of the disaster that he had said he would do to them, and he did not do it. Say that with me. He what?
He did not do it.
Say it one more time.
He did not do it.
God changes his mind when we respond to him. And I want you to grasp that today because the ultimate understanding of God the Father is his grace. Now, sometimes we get confused. We think that grace is only about Jesus. But you forget that it was God the Father who sent Jesus. Okay? So that all comes from his grace. His grace. God shows outrageous, irresistible grace to this great city. He calls it a great city, in which there are more than 120,000 people. Okay, 120,000 people. And it's interesting that it mentioned and cattle. That's interesting, I think. They have done evil. Now, did they do evil? Absolutely, they did evil. They were the reason Jonah did not want to go into this city is because these people were so evil, they would take the skulls of the young people of the countries they would conquer, and they would pile them on the borders after they had conquered territory around. When the Ninevites had gone out, these Assyrians had gone out, that's the way they would border the land. It was evil, and Jonah did not want to move into that city. You've heard that, but This is where God gives grace. I don't care what the evil is that you're thinking you did or that people around you have done. Now listen, because sometimes people do evil to us. How many have ever had evil done to you? Now listen, because God's heart is grace. And he tries to get us to have that heart when he talks to us about forgiveness. So I want you to see this, and I want you to understand this. And I want to start with my first dad story, okay? This is my first dad story, Timothy Jones, and he writes it. And when I read it, I was just moved by this. And so I want to share it with you because here's what Tim says. I never dreamed that taking a child to Disney World could be so difficult, or that such a trip could teach so much about God's outrageous grace. our middle daughter had been previously adopted by another family. And I'm sure this couple had the best intentions, but they never quite integrated the adopted child into their family of biological children. After a couple of rough years, they dissolved the adoption. And Tim says, we ended up welcoming an 8-year-old girl into our home. Now listen to this. For one reason or another, whenever our daughter's previous family vacationed at Disney World, they took their biological children with them, but they left their adopted daughter with a family friend. Usually, at least in the child's mind, this happened because she did something wrong that precluded her presence on the trip. And so, by the time Tim adopted their daughter, she had seen many pictures of Disney World. She had heard about all the rides and the characters and the parades. But when it came to passing through the gates of the Magic Kingdom, she had always been left on the outside. Once Tim found out about this history, he said, I made plans to take her to Disney World the next time we were close. I thought I had mastered the Disney World drill. I knew from previous experiences that freakishly oversized mouse and duck costumes somehow turn children into hysterical emotional beings. What I didn't expect was that the prospect of visiting this dream world would produce a stream of downright devilish behavior in our newest daughter. In the month leading up to our trip to the Magic Kingdom, she stole food when a simple request would have gained her the snack. She lied when it would have been easier to tell the truth, and she whispered insults that were carefully crafted to hurt her older sister as deeply as possible. As the days on the calendar moved closer to the trip, her mutinies multiplied. A couple days before our family headed to Florida, I pulled our daughter into my lap to talk through her latest escapade. I know, he said, I know what you're going to do, said our daughter. You're not going to take me to Disney World, are you? Tim says the thought hadn't crossed his mind, but her downward spiral suddenly started to make some sense. She knew she couldn't earn her way into the Magic Kingdom. She had tried and failed that test several times with her previous family. So she's living in a way that she now believes would give her the reason, the excuse for me not to take her, just like before. My easiest response to my daughter would have been, Tim says, if you don't start behaving right, you're right, I'm not taking you. But by God's grace, I didn't. Instead, I asked her, listen, is this trip something we're doing as a family? She nodded, brown eyes with tears. Are you part of this family? She nodded again. Then you're going with us. He said, I explained to her that there may be some consequences to help her remember what was right and wrong, but you're part of this family, and we're not leaving you behind. I'd like to say that my daughter's behaviors grew better after that moment, but they didn't. Her choices pretty much spiraled out of control at every hotel and rest stop all the way to Lake Buena Vista. Still, we headed to Disney World on the day we had promised, and it was a typical Disney day with lots of long lines and mingled with just enough magic to consider going back. How many of you have been there? Listen to this. Listen to this. In our hotel room that evening, a very different child emerged. She was exhausted, pensive, and a little weepy at times. But her month-long facade of rebellion had faded. When bedtime rolled around, I prayed with her, held her, and asked, "So how was your first day at Disney World?" She closed her eyes and snuggled down. After a few moments, she opened her eyes ever so slightly. "Daddy, Daddy," she said, "I finally got to go to Disney World. But it wasn't because I was good. It was because I'm yours." Listen today. That's the message of outrageous grace. Outrageous grace does not, are you listening? It's not a favor that you and I can achieve by being good. It's the gift that we receive from being God's. And I'm confused sometimes by people who come to me and they think that they talk about all the things that have happened in their life and they say, "There's no way God can forgive me, and I hope God lets me into heaven, and I hope I'm good enough, and I hope." Listen to me. Outrageous grace is God's goodness. Are you listening? God's goodness that comes looking for you. And this morning in this place of Church of Hope, those of you watching on Facebook today, I want you to hear me. God is looking for you to give you outrageous grace. For every father in this room, the Heavenly Father, every daughter and son in this room, your Heavenly Father is looking for you today. Looking for you to pour His outrageous grace. And listen, listen. If you think you can run your Heavenly Father off with some obscene gesture from your hand, you can't. Go ahead, hold your gesture in the face of God, and He will throw His arms around you just the same. Why is it that we think we can change God with our nasty behavior? He could not be God. He could not be God according to the Old Testament. You see, sometimes we get all messed up because we think it's only in the New Testament that grace comes. We think it's only because of Jesus that we have this. But the fact of the matter is, if you'll read the Old Testament, including Jonah 3, we start becoming exposed to the chesed. Say that word. Say it again. Don't you feel smarter? The chesed is what is taught all through the Old Testament, and it's this outrageous grace and mercy and love of God that we see here in Jonah 3. And it pours through the Bible. So yes, 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 we see it in the New Testament when Jesus tells the parable of a farmer paying a full day's wages to a crew of deadbeat day laborers with only a single hour on their punch card. He gives them a full day's wages. Matthew chapter 20. It's a man in the Old Testament marrying an abandoned woman and then refusing to forsake the covenant of marriage with her when she turns out to be a prostitute. The book of Hosea. It's the insanity of a shepherd who puts 99 sheep at risk to rescue the single lamb that's too stupid to stay with the flock. Come on, how many have been that stupid? Thank you for your honesty, liars on this side. Read the rest of Luke 15. It's the love of a father who hands over his finest rings and robes to a young man who has squandered his inheritance on a drunken binge with his fair weather friends. Grace, grace, God's grace. Listen to me. It's one-way love. Grace is one-way love. See, we live in a world that if we try to give someone love and they reject us, we eventually figure out and move away. But the fact of the matter is God does not move away. He does not move away. He does not move away from us. Here's the amazing thing about God's outrageous grace. This isn't merely what God would do. It's what he did do. Say that with me. It's not merely what he would do. It's what he did do. You see, sometimes I sit, and I did this morning as Chandler was singing that the atmosphere is changing. How many of you felt something during that song? Three people. What were we feeling? We were feeling God's grace. We were feeling his love. What is this atmosphere that we sing about? It's this presence of a loving, merciful, gracious God that comes around us in the midst of our world that is everything but gracious. It's everything but loving. It's everything but merciful. You turn on the news and your mind is just, it's overwhelmed. I think of 80 families in London today. And there will be more who lost children and loved ones in the fire. I think of all of the attacks that have happened and people that were so innocent and our congressman who lies still in serious condition. And what doesn't make sense all around us? You would think God would send judgment down, and that's what Jonah wanted for Nineveh. But it's not what happened. It's not what took place. You see, God could have chosen a multitude of someones if he wanted to. He could have chosen a multitude of someones. But here's the deal. Here's the deal. God is saying to you today, I could have chosen anyone in the whole world as my child, but I chose you. 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 I talked to my friend over here during the greeting. And I said, you're looking good. And he said, I'm healed. Because sometimes our bodies come under attack. Listen to me. Today, his love and mercy and grace and healing power is surrounding you. He will not leave you in that condition for eternity. Are you hearing me? He will not leave anything about us broken for eternity if we will just embrace him. He is here to promise us that all things work together for good to them that love the Lord. What happens? Well, take your notes because here it is. If we cling to worthless idols, we forfeit God's grace. Now, I want you to get this. What are worthless idols? Well, when you read the Old Testament, where we're reading right now in Jonah, we find out that idols were one of three things that the prophets were told to preach against. So when Jonah goes into Nineveh, he is a prophet, and prophets were told to preach against social injustice. They were told to preach against religion that was not focused on God the Father, and they were told to preach against idols. What are idols? Idols are substitutes to satisfy our never, never satisfied bodies and mind. You see, all of us were created with a will. How many of you know we have a will? Now, that will works really good with big decisions, but how many of you know it does a poor job when dessert is offered? Okay? And then there is the body and the mind. And all of those are unsatisfied. They're never satisfied. And surrounding the will, surrounding the mind, and surrounding the body is what we call the soul. Now, this is very important to understand. The soul is not something that floats away when we die. No, no. The soul is the operating system. It's the operating system that your will and your mind and your body are to function in. And when the soul is based on God as its refueling source, as its source of completion, then it integrates the will, mind, and body in a healthy way. But when it's not healthy, when it's sick, when the soul is sick, then what happens? The will and the mind and the body, they are disintegrated. They begin to not work well together because the operating system isn't working well. That's why when we die and we go to heaven, it's not that the soul leaves, it's that all of it's going with us. We're going to get a renewed mind. How many of you are glad for that? We're going to get a new body. How many of you are glad for that? I'm getting my hair back. And we're going to get a will that finally is not tempted to disobey God. How many of you are glad for that? Listen to me. This is God's grace. How many want that grace? Now this is so important. But what do? Instead of turning to God and looking to his grace to satisfy us, this unsatisfied body, this unsatisfied mind, if our mind was ever satisfied, we'd sell our TVs. This dissatisfaction that we feel, instead of turning to God's grace, we turn to idols. I got to have a bigger house. I got to have a better car. I got to have a better phone, better TV. Now we got LED. We got this. We got that. Oh, I got to get the curve. I got to get the... That's because we're dissatisfied. Now listen to me. God made you dissatisfied. Now this is going to help you, sir. It helped me. When Dallas Willard explained to me that God made me dissatisfied, and the reason he made me dissatisfied was so that I could prove that God is never, never, never anything but a giving God. You see, our dissatisfaction is to drive us to God so that he can give us everything we need. And when you understand that this dissatisfaction is to draw us to him, that he would satisfy us with his grace, his outrageous, irresistible grace, then you begin to understand, now, as I turn to him, as they did in Nineveh. Look at this, Jonah 3:5. And the people of Nineveh believed God. They called for a fast, put on sackcloth, from the greatest of them to the least of them. Now, this is very important. They did some outward things to show their inward heart. Say that with me. They did some outward things to show their inward heart. And at the end of the message today, I'm going to show you how you can do some outward things to show your inward heart. Now, I tried to get Pastor Scott to wear a sackcloth, which was a put around the loin, and that was it. That was all you wear. It was made out of goat's hair. They actually put them, the Bible says in Jonah 3, over their animals, over the cattle, over themselves. What were they trying to do? They were trying to show God outwardly what was going on inwardly. Cattle was their income. It was their way of life. It's the city of Mosul that we hear a lot about in the news today. That's where Nineveh was at. And Pastor Peter told you that the first week. And so Nineveh still, the area is still occupied with people. And if those people would turn to God's grace, and they need it, they desperately need it today, they would receive exactly what the Ninevites received way back in Jonah's day. What does that mean? That means for us, when we say, God, my trust is in you. I'm not going to trust in my cattle. I'm not going to trust in my own satisfaction of my desires. I'm going to trust in you, and I want to show that to you outwardly. That's what they did, and God responded. Look at this. The essence of the gospel, point two in your notes, the essence of the gospel is grace. What is the gospel? It is what? Grace. In the same way the gospel is bearing fruit and growing throughout the whole world, just as it has been among you since the day you heard of it and truly understood God's grace. That's what Paul said in Colossians 1, 6. So in other words, when you come to this understanding, just like the Ninevites did, they came to the understanding. So when we come to the understanding, we show God outwardly what is going on inwardly. Okay? But you have to understand it. That's why I'm here, and that's why you're here, and that's why I'm teaching to you what I'm teaching to you. Look at point three. Write this down in your notes. Fill it in. How do we receive grace? It's a gift. We don't earn it. It's a gift. How do we receive it? Here it is. Grace becomes ours when we understand it. You say, how come people don't turn to grace? Well, it's possible they don't understand it. And that's why in just a moment I'm going to tell you, you need to be like Jonah. Jonah went in and they understood grace, and they put on sackcloth, and they showed, they fasted, they didn't eat or drink. Even the king, it says, didn't do it. Look at what it says, Jonah 3:10. And God saw what they did, how they turned from their evil way. God relented of the disaster that he had said he would do to them, and he did not do it. In other words, when he sees that on the outward, we are trying to show what's going on the inward. Now, the inward, when he completes the work, is perfect. Does it always look perfect on the outside? No, not always perfect on the outside. And that's why grace is not contingent on looking or doing what someone else does. I'm not here to tell you you've got to act like me, or you've got to do like this, or you got, no. That's not it. It's what we do to show God that we understand his grace. Watch this. Number four in your notes. How do you know you've received the grace of God in your life? Here it is. I want to give this to you. I want you to get this. Externally, this is the sackcloth, you lose all bigotry about mixed up people, and you call all of them to grace. Now, come on, be honest with me. How many of you have had a neighbor down through the years that was mixed up? And you really didn't like them, did you? Come on, how many have had some people that you didn't get along with? There's a young man out here. He's probably, I don't know, maybe 11, 12. He's got both hands up. And how many of you could put both hands up? Listen to me. When we start calling everybody to grace, even people that don't make sense to us, even people that are evil, we've got to be careful. We've got to be careful, because for those of us that have understood grace, We have got to not wish that they would die. We have got to wish and pray that they would receive grace. Because once they understand grace, they change. I want to show this to you. So what happens? Externally, we start reaching out to people with grace, helping them to understand. Internally, we receive ultimate freedom through outrageous, irresistible grace and measureless mercy and endless forgiveness. We become intoxicated with God's joy. Now, I want you to hear me. Say intoxicated with joy. Okay? How many of you have heard people say, Christians, they're all believing the best. Everything's going to work out. Everything is good. God is good. Come on, how many of you have heard people say that? That's because we're drunk with joy. And that's exactly what we as Christians should be. Because guess what? I've never seen the righteous forsaken, nor his seed out begging for bread. Some of us are way, 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 way too concerned about the next political this and the next government that and the next this. Relax. God is still on his throne. And he is here to give us grace. Grace. I close with this. I want every man and every woman, I want every son and daughter, I want every father to listen to me. Those of you on Facebook, listen. Because some of you have got some shame. Some of you have done some things as fathers that embarrass you and you would rather not talk about and you wish you could turn the clock back. In 1945, World War II had drawn to a close. There was a young man named Jürgen who sat broken inside a prisoner of war camp in Scotland. He had been a reluctant soldier in Hitler's army. Inside this prisoner of war camp, he had months to contemplate what had been and what was to come. And the cities of his homeland that had been reduced to rubble, and the people were impoverished. And his sleep, Jürgen's sleep, was filled with repeating nightmares and terrors of what he had done in the war. And there are people in this room. There are people in this room today and people listening to me, fathers and women, who you're tormented with nightmares. You're tormented with thoughts of things from your past. And I want you to hear me. In 1945, September, at Camp 22 there in Scotland, the worst that Jürgen can remember happened. Why this was done, I don't know, but they posted pictures in around the grounds of Auschwitz. And Jürgen began to see the pictures of what they had done to the Jewish people there at Auschwitz, and he realized that he had been fighting in the army to keep the possibility of that going on for Hitler and his people. He says that now he was filled with such despair. He was overwhelmed with depression. He was just exasperated by the feelings of shame and disgrace. He said it was the hardest thing that he had ever worked through. This unshakable shame, and there are some people here listening to me today, and there's an unshakable shame that's in your life. In 1947, 2 years later, a chaplain came by and handed Jürgen a Bible. And Jürgen began to read the chapter that we are studying today. Jonah chapter 3. And he realized that God wanted to give grace to the evil. He began to read about Jesus and his death on the cross. And he did what Jesus did. He cried out, "My God, my God." It was a few months later that a group of young adults, just like your team that went to Honduras, a group of young adults went over there to that prisoner of war camp, and a group of Dutch teenagers began to talk about what had happened in the Netherlands, in their country, during the war. And Jurgen felt the shame and the guilt because he knew that he was involved in the army that brought this to the war. But he said there was something different about these young adults. They didn't speak. They did not speak with a condescending or a vindictiveness. Instead, they came to offer forgiveness. They came to offer forgiveness. And he said it was completely unexpected. He said these Dutch teenagers embodied the love of God. And he said, "I embraced it. I embraced it." Now let me tell you who Jurgen became. Because Jurgen embraced the grace of God, Jurgen, are you listening to me? Listen to this. Becomes one of the 20th century's greatest theologians, Jurgen Moltmann, and you can read his books. And we now study about grace from Jurgen Moltmann. And why? Because he experienced it, he embraced it. And if you're here today or listening to me online, I'm here to tell you that no matter what you've done or what's been done to you, his grace is yours today. 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 Just like the prodigal son in the parable of Luke 15, the father is running towards you. He's running towards you. He's coming to embrace you. He's coming to take everything that has brought you shame and guilt and to cover it in his grace. The robe of his grace called righteousness. Right standing with him. Would you bow your heads with me all over this room? And if you're online, would you respond just like those in this room? How many of you remember the day that you embraced God's grace and God embraced you with his grace? And you remember the feeling in your heart and the relief of your shame and the joy that began to flood you. You were wrecked with his grace. It changed your whole life. How many of you are here today and you would say, "I remember that. I remember that. I remember that day." Throw your hand up. Throw it up. You may take it down. What about those of you that are not sure? Or maybe you're still battling with the guilt and the shame, and I did this and I did that and this happened. And hear me. Hear me. I'm going to count to three today. The prayer team is coming and standing here at the front. And as they're coming to stand, I'm going to ask every one of you that couldn't lift your hand a moment ago, I'm going to ask you as I get to three to throw your hand straight up. And when you do, it's going to be like you're putting on sackcloth. It's going to be like you're saying, "God, I'm doing what the Ninevites did. I am going to respond to you." How? With an upraised hand. Now listen, some of you are going to respond further. You're going to get up out of your seat in a moment and you're going to come to these who are at the front to pray. And they're going to give you a now what booklet and they're going to pray over you. And some of you are here today and you're going to walk out of this room like Jurgen Moltmann, free from your shame and your guilt, because you've been overwhelmed by his grace. Assured that heaven is your home and that you will face God and he will embrace you there and say, "My son, my daughter, I'm proud of you and I love you." If you couldn't lift your hand a moment ago, you don't remember when you embraced his grace. But right now, you want his grace. I'm going to count to three and I want you to throw your hand straight up. Are you ready? One, two, three. Lift it right there.
may take it down. So many lifted their hands today. Those of you online that lifted your hand, would you send an email? Would you send an email to churchofhope.com and just send it to scott@churchofhope.com and he will make sure you get a Now What booklet. Now listen to me. I want you to see this. Look right here, everybody. This isn't the answer of all answers. This is just the next steps. Once you understand His grace, that's why you lifted your hand. You understood His grace. Once you understand His grace, there are just some simple things that could help you. This is a simple, small booklet, but it can help you now move forward. These that are at the front want to give you this booklet. They want you to have it. They want to know who you are and find out who you are. Let me tell you what happened last night. I had a young man who came and he said, "Would you pray for me?" He said, "I want to be wrecked by God's grace." Now listen to me. He knew about Christ. He knew about God. But he wanted to be overwhelmed with His grace. Today, I would like all of us in this room to be wrecked by God's grace. Here's how we're going to do it. We're going to come from our seats and we're going to move to the communion tables on the side. Some of us are going to come here and receive the booklet. Some of us are going to come here and receive prayer for healing or needs. But when you go to the communion tables on either side of the altar and you take the bread and you take the cup, I want you to focus on God's grace, His outrageous, irresistible grace, and I want you to be overwhelmed with it. I want you to be wrecked by His grace. That's what communion is all about. That's what it's all about. Stand with me all over this room. From all over this room, if you want a copy of Now What, if you want to move to take communion, if you just want to come and be wrecked with His grace, if you just want prayer, I'm going to step down and pray for people who may be sick or may need something in your life. Come. Come as we listen to this song.